Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and beside me is a man who likes his sugar with coffee and cream. He's the captain.
Thank you. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you, you beautiful people.
Let me ask you a question here, Captain. If you had a little horsey, what would you name it?
Hi-Ho Silver.
I thought you would say Paul Revere. The answer was Paul Revere. You failed.
I always fail. Thanks for listening to the show. Make sure you tell a friend. It means a lot. And thanks to all the beautiful people that share our show on social media. We like your jib.
Yeah, and we are here to do our second part of the Emma Filipov episode. Mm-hmm. So thank you for joining us in the garage. We are drinking Dirt Wolf by Victory Brewing Company, and we have
definitely not dirt.
That's right. We have a few more people to thank for the beer for this week. I'd like to thank Robert in Elgin, Illinois. Robert suggests trying the great beers from Greenbush Brewing Company out of Sawyer, Michigan. He says that they are a great group of people making great beers. Robert, we will check that out. We also have Gio in Vancouver, British Columbia, and Karen, who is our friend in Glassboro, New Jersey. So thank you, Robert, Gio, and Karen. And if you want to buy us around for next week's show, or maybe you just want to buy me around and the captain doesn't get anything, that is just fine with us. Just put that in the donation notes.
That's fine with you.
You go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
Yeah, and for everything True Crime, go to truecrimegarage.com. Follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all that stuff at True Crime Garage. And thanks for sharing, and we like your gym.
Yeah, and all of our old episodes and bonus episodes are available in the iTunes store and at our website, truecrimegarage.com. Go to the store page.
So if you haven't listened to part one of the Emma Filipov case, go do so now and then come back and join us.
That's right. That's enough of the business. Gather around, grab a chair, grab some more beer, and let's talk some true crime. The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. We have part two of our disappeared case. We are talking about Emma Filipov, who disappeared from Victoria, British Columbia. She was age 26. She disappeared November 28th, 2012. So we have a missing woman here, Captain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some say she had been acting strange, and it also appears that maybe she might have been planning something on the day that she went missing. Maybe a move or a travel off somewhere, we don't know. I'm wondering, we talked about this, we wondered if the van was operational that she had that was towed away that morning.
And we believe it was operational, but maybe not to have the ability to travel long distances.
Yeah, because it could have just been in need of repair. We, in this van, okay, after she disappeared,
they figured out that there were some items, some personal belongings of hers that were found in her red Mazda MPV.
You want me to read those off?
Yeah, read off your belongings or her belongings.
So it was a red Mazda, what is it, MPV?
Yeah.
And it was a 93.
So for those of you that don't know, an MPV is actually a very cool van. I've always wanted one. It looks like a traditional minivan. But the cool thing about the MPV, it's an actual all-wheel drive vehicle. It's a four-wheel drive.
So in the vehicle, they found a passport, a library card, a digital camera, some clothes, a pillow, a laptop, and recently checked out books from the library.
Yeah, she frequented the library. There were books that she had checked out, and they also found several of her journals. Now, we had talked about her movements on the 28th, on the day that she went missing, and we know that she went to the 7-Eleven twice, right? Mm-hmm. And on one occasion, she picked up a prepaid credit card, and on another occasion, she came back and picked up a prepaid cell phone. Now, what are the leads in this case, right? Where do we go from the point where she disappeared? So one would want to track either that cell phone or that prepaid credit card, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have the prepaid credit card. It was tracked down. They found out that it was being used by a man. He used it to purchase cigarettes. He purchased cigarettes with the card. The man was located. He was questioned, fingerprinted, and even polygraphed. His claim is that he found the card in the street. This was about, I believe, 10 kilometers from where Emma had talked to police, where she was last seen.
Yeah, it was around the hotel, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And he had used it. He said he'd found it in the street. And because they questioned him thoroughly and they gave him the polygraph, they believe him to be totally honest about how he came about finding this credit card or prepaid card.
Yeah, this individual also contacted Shelly, and Shelly is Emma's mother. Shelly runs a Facebook group on, I don't know if she runs it, but she's very involved finding Emma, Facebook group. You might want to check that out. But he contacted her basically saying, like, I told the police what I believe, mm-hmm. but I'm an alcoholic, and I could have blacked out, and I'm not 100% sure where I found this item at.
He could have found it. Somebody could have gave it to him. He could have bought it off of somebody. Sometimes that happens.
Well, he even said that he could have got it from her. He doesn't know.
That's interesting. And well, here's the thing with the polygraph though, right? If he's telling you what he thinks happened, he's going to pass the polygraph. I mean, if he just has no freaking idea how he got the thing, you can't catch him in a lie. He just doesn't know.
Right.
We don't know what questions were administered during that test, and but for whatever reason,
I mean, it's probably started off where did you find the credit card?
Yeah, that's probably one of the questions. But for whatever reason, the authorities believe him to be as honest as he could be about how he came about finding the card. Mm-hmm. Now, regarding the prepaid cell phone, this cell phone has not been located, but according to the company, the phone has never been activated or used.
Right.
So that lead kind of dies down.
But I think what it's coming, I think where you're going with this though, is that it seems to me that she was planning to leave based on getting the prepaid credit card and getting the cell phone.
One thing that I would ask, I was going to say ask myself, but I would
go ahead and ask yourself. We'll wait.
I would ask anybody involved in this case,
wait forever.
Why do you need a prepaid credit card when she has a debit card that has access to just under $3,000? Is there something that you can't purchase using a debit card that you mm-hmm. need to purchase with a prepaid credit card? Or is it just for the fact of you don't want that purchase linked to you?
Right.
You know, because you don't have to give a name when you buy a prepaid credit card. You just have this set amount that you can spend on whatever.
That's an interesting point.
You know, I'd always wondered about that. Now, you touched on, you talked about Emma's mother, Shelley. Now, we should point out that her mother stayed in the city of Victoria. And again, this is very far from Shelley's home. She stayed there.
This is across the country.
Yeah, it's a 45-minute drive. I don't know how long it takes to fly there.
45-minute drive?
A 45-hour drive. Right. Sorry, it's across the country.
It's part two. It's a little loosey-goosey right now.
It's very late in the garage. But anyway, Victoria is where she was staying, and this is far from her home. you know, she had pets, and more importantly, she had other children to look after. Some of these are older kids. But she stayed there to look for Emma and to help create awareness regarding Emma's disappearance.
Yeah, so originally her plan was that she was going to stay for possibly 3 days. That was her original plan. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get my plane ticket, head out there. I'm going to bring my daughter home, or at least see what's going on with her, because she's been calling me over and over. So she gets out there, mm-hmm. can't find her. They do the missing person report, and she figured, well, I'm just going to stay here for these 3 days, and she's going to turn up. After those 3 days, she doesn't turn up, and so she says, well, I'm going to stay a week. And she figured, I will be able to find her within a week. Doesn't find her within a week. I believe she ends up staying in that hotel for close to 3 months.
Yeah, it was right around the 2 month or over 2 month mark. Now, but you, like you had said, she believes she's going to find her daughter, obviously, for several reasons. One, the authorities tell her, you know, given her age, she might just be out with friends. She right. might just be, you know, she's in her mid-20s. She might just be out partying somewhere. She right. may have tied one on and not come home, you know, or not checked into the shelter. The other thing to think about here, too, is she was living somewhat of a transient lifestyle. You know, she was staying on a houseboat or boats. I don't know how big these boats were, if you could even call them a houseboat, but she was staying on boats.
Well, you should probably ask the captain.
She had stayed at friends' homes. She had stayed in the shelter. And for all we know, she may have even slept a night or two in her van.
And then the tree house.
Yeah. So she's living a transient lifestyle. She could turn up any day, and that's really what her mother expected to happen, but did not happen. And she ends up staying there for just over 2 months. And, you know, this is a sticky situation, right? You know, you want to stay there, obviously, and look for your child. You want to stay and do anything you can, but you also have all these responsibilities at home, and you have others that need you at home. And it's just truly a terrible, terrible situation.
Yeah, but this is your daughter. You're going to do anything that you can. Right. Mm-hmm. I think that's a given. Any good mother would. And I think she was doing, you know, as much as she could, which I think, you know, God bless her on that. And I think you have to remain hopeful. But I also think that the cops were, not only do we think that maybe she could have just like went and hung out with some friends and she'll turn up, but most of the cops don't believe that there was foul play at this point.
Right.
They're thinking that, you know, she either is hanging out with somebody or she went missing on her own terms.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about the documentary that had come out, Finding Emma. And we should point out that that came about because of her mother, Shelley, right? She got mm-hmm. in contact with somebody at the CBC and explained her daughter's story to them. And they decided to cover it in this documentary. And it was because of this documentary, Finding Emma, that it created great awareness for the case. You know, it sent everybody looking for Emma, and this creates some leads at first. And the first one that it comes up with is a Emma Filipoff sighting. This was somebody that had seen what he or she believed was Emma Filipoff.
Yeah, it was in a coffee shop.
Yeah, and
have you seen this picture?
This was, yes, I have, and this was in nearby Vancouver.
Yeah, but, right, Vancouver, which has a huge homeless population. But when you saw this picture, what did you think?
I thought the same thing that a lot of people thought.
It looks just like her.
Well, yeah, and it's actually to the point where, not even to the point where you say it looks just like her, it is her. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's exactly what occurred, you know, and not only that, Captain, it's in a nearby proximity to where she went missing. Victoria is very close to the big, big city of Vancouver. As you said, there is a homeless population there. So there are people
quite large
living a transient lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, and I believe I'm not.
I call that the ultimate transient lifestyle.
Here's the other thing, though. I'm not certain. But I believe that Vancouver is like the Las Vegas of Canada. Not with the gambling, but you know how like Las Vegas
with
is considered.
Strippers.
No, I don't know about that. But Las Vegas is considered like the culinary capital of the United States. You know, there's every expensive restaurant you can think of is in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And her having been a chef was interesting to me that she might find her way to Vancouver, mm-hmm. where you could earn a good living doing that kind of that profession. But here's the thing too. It looks exactly like her. Everybody thinks that it's Emma, but not only that, it's of a woman seen in a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
She was known to have visited coffee shops.
Well, and that's not that far of a stretch. Everybody visits coffee shops.
Yeah, but I don't stay at a coffee shop. I get in the aisle, I purchase something, and then I leave. What I'm getting at here is that Emma was known to have sat in coffee shops and write in her journal and stay there for a period of time. The person that said that they had seen her they said that she was in the coffee shop writing.
Yeah.
This looks like Emma.
I think in the picture she's reading, but I'm not 100%.
Yeah.
So it looks like her.
Looks like her, and it's describing actions that she was known to have done.
Right. So here we go. It's her. We solved it. We found her. But then here comes the wrinkle.
Well, before the wrinkle, the Filipovs are shown the picture. Mm-hmm. And they say, like you said, it's over. The case is over. We found our daughter. Right. Now give us the wrinkle.
Well, then the boyfriend of this girl contacts the authorities and says, this is not Emma. This is my girlfriend. And that's basically it.
Yeah, but they ultimately locate the girl and know that...
Well, maybe it's not the boyfriend. I might have screwed that up.
You did screw it up a little bit.
Yeah.
They end up locating the girl and they talk to her.
Well, no, she came forward. Mm-hmm. That's what it was.
And
I watched a lot of stuff on this, man.
And it's not her. Unfortunately, right. It's not Emma. It's just somebody else that's cooler than me that sits in coffee shops and journals. but the next lead is of... Well, okay. This can only be described. There's a few different names for this next lead. Some people call it the missing poster man. Some people call it the green shirt man.
I call it the green shirt man.
You call it the green shirt man. I call it the weird dude man. This, again, is taking place in nearby Vancouver. This is about 6 months after Emma had disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
A man, of course, wearing a green shirt and jeans, enters a small store.
Yeah, kind of boutique type store.
Yeah, and he had removed a missing persons poster of Emma, right? And he's got it kind of like wound up or crumpled up in his hand. You can see it in the still pictures.
Right. I don't think they saw him remove the poster. He just had a crumpled up poster in his hand.
And he pretty rudely told the clerk that the picture was of his girlfriend and that she was not missing and that she just wants to be left alone.
That's the story that I get confused with the coffee shop girl.
Yeah. And he's very rude about this, right? And here's the thing. The man, the weird missing poster green shirt man dude, he's not been located. You know, the authorities want to speak to this man.
Well, let's go a little further because I might have some information that you didn't find.
Fantastic.
So there was, with this Finding Emma Facebook page, again, if you have any information, go check that out. But on their page, they were posting pictures of Emma or just posting different posts. So this bar from Vancouver liked one of the things and it was talking about the post was about the green shirt man. We're mm-hmm. trying to find this guy. And it was like a like, and maybe this bar, so the bar joined the group, liked this post, and at some point said, like, well, look at that, or something, like the comment was, looky here, or something like that. And so...
Meaning, go ahead.
Well, I don't know what it means. So
did they post a picture? Like, are we supposed to look for something in the picture? They're just posting a comment?
Yeah, they're just... So the Facebook group... posted a picture of the green shirt man.
Right.
On that picture, that this bar liked it and then made some weird comment. Well, if you go to the Facebook page of this bar and you start sifting through their pictures, guess who's sitting at the bar? The green shirt man.
In a green shirt.
I don't think he's in a green shirt. But,
a guy matching the description of the green shirt man.
Right. And so I believe, and this is what has been so great about the Facebook group. They're not just sharing stuff on social media. They're actually going out and hitting the pavement and trying to follow these leads and really helping out Shelly and the Philippoff family. So big ups to you guys on the Facebook group. So I believe they went out to the bar and asked questions, but they couldn't locate the guy. But it's still a little odd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the store clerk from the convenience store that we were talking about, he is the one that notifies the police after this encounter, mm-hmm. after he's on the wrong end of this rude verbal display by the green shirt man. He notifies the authorities, and they did have video footage of it. Like you said, there's some still pictures as well.
Green shirt man. They should have called him the mean shirt man.
And, you know, this is somebody that they obviously want to talk to. This is a man that has not come forward.
I'd like to talk to him.
And which is very troubling.
Yeah. It's just such an odd comment. This is my girlfriend and she's missing. Again, the only thing that maybe there's some weird mental thing going on with this guy. Maybe he's an alcoholic and he's just saying some weird stuff just to say weird stuff. I want to know what his intentions are for saying this comment.
Oh, no, exactly. And that's what everybody wants to know. That's the million-dollar question. And the interesting thing here, too, for me, is that, you know, when we talk about these different cases, whether it be a disappearance or a murder or anything like that, we have these weird hearsay incidences from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
The difference here is this is captured. His picture and image has been captured by the you know, we can see it on the footage from the convenience store. So we know this is not just some store clerk calling in saying this happened and we have to go off of what they're saying. We can see it with our own eyes. We know this happened. We know they want to talk to this guy. But we don't know who he is. What are our other leads on this case here, Captain? I mean, we talked about some small leads, right? We talked about the cell phone, the credit card, the green mean shirt man,
mm-hmm.
the spotting of what we originally thought was Emma and turns out not to be her. These are all short stories, right? We have a couple of long stories, I think, that are potential leads in this case.
What do you want to dive into our friend Julian again?
Yeah, we should, you know. Yeah, let's kick it off there.
Okay, so again, like we talked about in part one, we have this guy Julian that becomes friends, new friends with Emma, and then she left.
In Perth. They become friends in Perth, Ontario.
Right, which is on one side of the country. All of a sudden, now Julian is in Victoria. And this is very odd because what are the chances that you strike up this relationship with this girl? The relationship is then severed. And then a couple months later, you end up in Victoria and he runs into Emma.
And we have to point out here, Julian, by his own words, states that he had no prior knowledge of where Emma was planning to move to. He had no prior knowledge. He says he believed that she planned to move out west somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah.
But, you know, that's a 45-hour drive between Perth and where she ends up. So there's a lot of places west of Perth, right? He knows that she plans on moving out west, and he happens to pick the same city.
Yeah, and he did an interview with the Nighttime Podcast. Our buddy Jordan did that interview with him. You got to check that out, Nighttime Podcast. And it's, I think, the third part, right?
Yeah.
And he goes into more detail, and he explains how he decided to pick Victoria. But he's also honest. Like, I had a good relationship with this girl, even though it was severed. I had a fascination with her. She was a positive person in my life. I kind of wanted her to stay in my life. So yeah, I hope I would see her again. So he's working, and one day he catches this girl, her eyes, and it's Emma. And they talk for a minute, and he's at work and he's on lunch break. And she says, oh, well, you know, It was good running into you. We'll have to catch up. And she's asking about his work schedule and stuff like that.
Yeah, he says that she is pleasantly surprised by his...
Yeah.
By seeing him.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, and maybe she's one of those people that believe, okay, some time passed, and maybe she believes that the universe gives you certain things that you need, and sometimes the universe points you into the right direction. So, anyways, that's at lunchtime. He says to her, and I applaud him, being a gentleman, hey, do you want to come back later, and we'll catch up and take you out to eat? And she says to him, well, you know, I don't like to plan things out that far in advance. Mm-hmm. Now, I believe she was just saying that as a, you know, a nice way to say no. But then he runs into her a couple more times. Now,
and he says, you know, we can only go off of his
right,
story.
Based off what
you
he
know,
said.
There's two sides to the story. We only get to hear one.
Well, there's three, but
and the one side that we get to hear is his, and he says that I did not try to ask her for a number or, you know, where I could find her. I told her where I worked because it was just, you know, a couple doors down from where they bumped into one another.
Well, and I think she asked, like, what are you doing here? I'm working.
Yeah, and he tells her, in, you know, that if you ever want to hang out or if you ever want to catch up with me, you know where I work, just drop in and ask for me.
Yeah, and sometimes I think that's the best approach that you can have. I mean, you've had situations where maybe you're pushing the issue to have this friendship maybe too much. And so I think he was doing the right thing there where he's like, okay, I still am infatuated with this girl. I still enjoy hanging out with her. You know, I think he made the comment that these 10 minutes that they talked were like some of the 10 best minutes of his life. But I mean, who knows? It could just be great conversation. And that's something that I love.
But go ahead. But whether he's still infatuated with her or not, it might be a great 10 minutes for him because he's in a new place. Maybe he doesn't know anybody yet and he sees
and
a familiar
person. A
and not only that, somebody that he considered to be a very good friend that he obviously wanted to be long-term friends with.
Right. And so then he claims that he runs into her a couple more times, but the next time he runs into her, she's definitely something's off.
She's not pleasantly surprised to see him the second time.
Yeah. But it's like weird because and I don't want to go into too many details because there's so much stuff in that interview that you need to check out. But basically the short end of the stick is that he ran into her a couple more times and there was some kind of a friendship that went on. Now what he told Jordan in the interview, which he never even told authorities, was he saw her the day of November 28th.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw her from across the street and she had no shoes on. And, you know, just like her other acquaintance said, and he thought something was up, but again, he didn't want to push the issue because he's done that before. So he just makes the statement to her, hey, if you ever want to hang out sometime, and he kind of talks to her and he leaves. Now, where we go from here is that we know that Emma went missing. Well, then Julianne gets involved in the group. Now, at some point, Julianne sends Facebook messages to Emma's father, and then I think eventually sends Facebook messages to Emma's mother. But Julianne gets involved in the search.
Well, and even before that, he had sent a Facebook message to her father because there was a concert in Victoria that he wanted to go to.
Right, right.
And he was going to go. This wasn't something like he saw Emma and he was like, oh, I'm going to go to this concert. This was a concert he really wanted to go to. And he thought, oh, I have somebody here that I know. I could invite her. And mm-hmm. I think, according to him, he says in the Facebook message to her father, James, you know, if she gets in contact with you, if you can get in contact with her, let her know I'm going to this concert. I have an extra ticket and she could just drop by my store.
Right.
He works at like some kind of outdoor store. I don't know exactly what that means, but,
yeah, I was trying to sum it up quick because like it's a long interview and there's a lot of details. And so if you really want to dive in that, check out the Nighttime Podcast. But so there's some weird stuff. And one of the Facebook messages, he says that he was stalking. Now, this is coming from a guy that is French, so the choice of words that he uses are sometimes off, right? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that he saw her the day she went missing, and then he gets a part of this group. Well, then this is where it gets weird, is because now people are going, this guy's gestures, there's some creepy stuff about it. Mm-hmm. And I think he's well aware of that too. And I think most guys have been in a situation where maybe you're a little too infatuated with somebody and you do some things that are borderline creepy, maybe borderline stalker, but you don't see it at the time. You just see, I like this girl. I'm a nice guy. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah. Yeah. He checks all those boxes. Yes, 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 yes.
Yes, yes. He checks all. So then as they can't find Emma, well, he becomes a suspect and he then since removes himself from the group and has not really helped much in the search anymore. But law enforcement wants to talk to him. So they bring him in and he figures that they're going to question him about the disappearance of Emma.
But how does he get involved in the search? Right. He bumps into her mother.
Yeah, but right. No, but he actually hears from one of his friends that Emma's missing.
Right.
So that's because it's national news at this point. Mm-hmm. So he inserts himself in the search, but I guess you would too. I mean, first of all, this girl is from Perth where you're from, and now she's in Victoria where you're at now, and she went missing, and you don't have any friends here or a small group of friends if you have any, and so you insert yourself in the search because this is a good person that you admire, that you had some fascination with, and you're going to try to help any way you can.
I agree with all that, but what I'm saying is he doesn't like walk into a police station and say, hey, I knew her from Perth, and I've seen her here a couple times. Mm-hmm. How can I help? No, he bumps into her mother at a library, the library that Emma was known to have gone to from time to time. And was he going there to help and look for Emma? We don't know. Was he going there to look for Emma's mother and then insert himself into the search or the investigation?
Right.
We don't know his intentions.
We don't know what his agenda was. And maybe he thought simply, I'm going to help them find her. And then brownie points for me, you know, so I can get closer to Emma. I don't know. And some of the stuff he did was a little weird. And like I said, it borders creepy, at borders stalker. Some of it, it's like he's putting his toe over the line and kind of dancing. But anyways, they give him a lie detector, right? And he passes the polygraph. And he even states in the interview that I didn't think they were going to talk about murder. They were going to talk about her disappearance. Mm-hmm. And so when they started asking questions about, you know, did you murder Emma? I think he could just kind of shut down altogether. Again, that said, once the Finding Emma documentary came out, he then went and had a conversation with Jordan, our buddy, doing a podcast. And I feel like if he had something to hide, that he wouldn't do an interview.
Right.
And it's a long interview. And what Jordan said was, I contacted him. I talked to him for about an hour on the phone. He didn't want to do the interview and eventually just called back and said, I'll do it. Because he wanted to clear his name. So not only did he take the polygraph, but he also did this interview on the Nighttime Podcast. And
he was in the documentary as well.
Yeah. He's in and that's the thing.
He did some on-camera interviews for the documentary. Mm-hmm. So he seems to be helpful. And I know that here's the reason why the Nighttime Podcast interview is a must-listen. Because it's a lengthy interview. It's extremely interesting.
But very well produced.
But here's the other thing, right? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that he says in there. You know, not our friend Jordan, obviously Jillian, the suspect. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that Jillian says in there that makes him sound very guilty. There are things in there that he says that make him sound very innocent. There's a portion in there too. I can't remember if it was right at the end or near the end of the interview, but it sounds like he's breaking down a little bit. Like he's getting choked up emotionally. Emotions are coming out.
Well, yeah.
And I mean in a way of somebody that is truly hurt by the disappearance of this woman.
Well, not only is he probably hurt that she disappeared, but he's also hurt that he's being, after this documentary came out, you know, even though he was cooperative, he passed these tests, people are still pointing the finger at this guy. And I think that really bothered him because he's just like, and it also bothers him too. I mean, think about it this way. People go, oh, well, you were her acquaintance. Well, I guess in definition, he was an acquaintance because they were only friends for a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. But they were building a friendship. And a friendship has to start somewhere. And he considered her a friend. He considered somebody that's positive in his life. And I think it's sad. And you can see some creepy stuff in his interview. But at the same time, he's opening himself up. And he's allowing himself to be vulnerable. And he didn't have to do that. And I commend him for doing such. And I think it cleared up a lot of stuff in my mind, because as you start diving into the case, you start going, well, maybe this, you know, quote unquote stalker guy. And we only call him a stalker, and most people only call him a stalker because in one of the emails to the father, he used the word stalker.
Well, and that's how he's been labeled by others, by the general public. We don't mean to label him that. It's just,
but law enforcement does not label him as a stalker.
And yeah, and they don't know if he's even involved in anything.
I don't think he is.
Okay, that's fine.
I think he's a little misunderstood.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. I think he's misunderstood. I think I don't understand him, that's for sure. And
but he doesn't come off as there is some sweetness in his tone and his demeanor.
I agree with that 100%. But the thing that I keep kind of going back to here is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird is it that he goes from Perth to Victoria,
mm-hmm.
and she's in Victoria? I mean, come on a scale of 1 to 10, that's at least a 9, right? That's very close to a 10.
I wonder sometimes if it's just maybe heard conversation in passing. So when he was picking, he was like, oh yeah, well, this Victoria checks off all these things on my list.
Yeah, but he had some reasons for going there. You're exactly right.
Yeah, well, he had tons of reasons. And his current employer, when he was in Perth, had people that had rentals out there. So mm-hmm. it was like, okay, well, now I know where I can get housing. He had a lead on a job. But I think there was something in his back of his head that, like, maybe this comment that Emma made, where if she was going to go out west, it would be one of these cities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he knew that on some level and was just hopeful. I don't think, look, I mean, it's a very difficult thing when you find somebody and you really enjoy their company, you really enjoy looking at them. It's a big risk. You got to open yourself up to them and try to. And you have the fear of being rejected. So I don't know. I mean, there's parts of me that there's parts when I'm listening to that interview that I just feel bad for him.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I definitely feel bad for him on some level. But, you know, okay, here's another weird thing too, right? Shelley, Emma's mom, states that, you know, the parents paid for Emma's flight to get her to Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
However, beforehand, she was so ready to go that Emma had purchased a bus ticket to ride out there. And Shelley believes that Emma would have walked around with this bus ticket in her back pocket, and that somebody that knew her may have been able to see that bus ticket, whether she had told anybody exactly where she was going or not.
Right. Well, Emma and Julian were constantly taking walks together. So again, who knows? I mean, he could have seen something, mm-hmm. but I don't think that makes him responsible for her disappearance.
Circling back to Shelley Filipov. So, you know, we said that she had worked very hard to find her daughter. That's not in dispute here.
Mm-hmm.
She put up posters. She went out on the streets. She was showing people pictures of her daughter. She was asking strangers and showing pictures to strangers of her daughter and asking them, if have they seen her? Do they know her?
Well, she went on a a podcast that wasn't famous.
Yeah. And
I mean, she was doing some crazy stuff.
And like I said, I believe she was a big part in spearheading the idea for the documentary, getting that out on the CBC, which made this a national case. It brought national attention to Emma's case. There's a weird wrinkle here too, right, Captain? There's a drug charge.
Yeah.
We see a drug charge against Shelley.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a result of her son,
mm-hmm.
that her son is living with her or staying from time to time, and they find drugs and guns in the house.
Yeah, what I heard was that he was into real estate. He had 4 properties, I believe, at the time, and instead of living in one, he decided that he was going to leave all of them. So he was going to, he put all of them on the market. Then he took pretty much all his belongings and then put them in his mother's house. So again, totally reasonable that you would go in and out of your parents' house because you have things in storage. I think everybody's been at that point in their life where maybe they're going from apartment to house and there's this overlap. So all his belongings are there. And whatever criminal activities he was involved in, the law enforcement were following him for a long time. And eventually they charged him with drug charges. So the majority of the charges are going to him. But because this stuff was also found in her house, you know, she's getting charges.
It's her address. It's her house.
Mm-hmm.
He's not technically living there or receiving mail there. So she looks guilty by association, basically. Mm-hmm.
And most people would not talk about the charges because it's an open case. She's been pretty forthcoming about her explanation of this. You can hear that with Jordan as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, she, in my opinion, one, stands up very well for herself,
mm-hmm.
but she's also not making any excuses for her son.
No.
And, you know, I know she loves her son very much and still does.
Of course.
And always will. But again, she's not making any excuses for him. She's not saying whether he's guilty or not, mm-hmm. but she's saying there was something going on there.
Well, I talked to a detective today about this too. I was just going over the case and seeing if I just missed anything that was pretty obvious. And when I brought up these drug charges and I explained her explanation, he said that that's very logical to me. So he was on the side of she's probably not going to eventually, they're probably not going to go through with the charges. Or if she is charged with them, she's probably not going to be found guilty of them.
In all likelihood, they're using that as leverage if they need to get more information.
Right.
They're going to threaten the mother, the owner of the home.
Yeah, which sucks because she's not going to want to turn on her son.
It's a bit of a process, though, and it's part of the process. And if they need more information on the son, they might have to threaten jail time to the mother to get that needed information. Because you know they're probably... they're probably going after a bigger fish, right?
Yeah. And yeah, so they'll lean on Shelley, then lean on the son, and then keep leaning until they get bigger and bigger people. The first thing I thought, though, when I saw these charges brought up was, does this make Emma's actions on the surveillance cameras make sense? Because it constantly looks like she's looking at, you know, like looking for somebody, or she's maybe afraid of somebody. But I don't think so. I think these charges have nothing to do with the case. I think it's just one of those weird things. When you have a missing person case, there's normally so little information of the events after, you know, a little bit before. And then basically all you have to go off of is early childhood events, maybe some journal writings, maybe some pictures you found that aren't developed. And then it's just all this randomness. So I think because it was such big news in Canada that once these charges came out, it was like, oh, now the story gets juicier. But I believe that these charges have nothing to do with Emma's disappearance at all.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is the thing that resonates with me, the thing that I keeps ringing in my ears, you know, we had a friend of ours, a friend of the show, once tell us what? You don't get 2 coincidences in a disappearance.
Yeah, James Renner.
Or a murder case. You just, in an unsolved crime, there's not 2 coincidences. as a result of one person being involved. And we have this weird situation here where we have two coincidences with two separate people. We have it with the mother, Shelley. You know, she's on the phone with her daughter. Can I come home? Yes, you can come home. Can you come out here and help me? Yes, I can come out here and help you. Oh, I'm told and turned away and told not to come out there, but I come out on my own anyway. And her daughter investigates a ride to the airport the same evening. These are double coincidences that are weird. And then second of all, we have the situation with Jillian, they were friends in Perth, and he happens to land in the same spot that she landed, and he happens to bump into her, and he believes he sees her on the last day that she has...
Yeah, well, the whole Emma going to the airport and the mom heading out that way is a coincidence, but it's also a coincidence that the day that she goes out there, that she is she's last seen 3 hours before she gets there. Mm-hmm. That's a coincidence too. You know, you go out there to help her and she's gone, you know. But yeah, it's such a riddle of a case. And we should also mention that in the area that she went missing from, you know, there was that hotel that we talked about, but there was also a bridge and there was also, I think, a arbor going through there. Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing though. We have two people that are close to her, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, one's a mom, one's a friend.
Yeah. And two people that are close to her that you could, they are close to the case. Are they suspects? You could make an argument that they are. I don't see it at the end of the day.
I think, first of all, until she's found, everybody's a suspect still.
Everybody's a suspect. But I also see that maybe in this situation, you do get two coincidences. And maybe. It's,
yeah.
And maybe you do.
That's one of the things that makes it such a fascinating case.
But it makes one wonder, too. Okay. Emma looked to have been planning something. She's making preparations for something.
Right.
Right. Okay. So this is what's weird. Obviously the prepaid cell phone is weird. The prepaid credit card is weird when she already has a debit card. Is she running from someone? Is she just running because that's her nature? Is she running from because she thinks her mother's coming to town?
Right.
Is she running because she's bumping into this Jillian guy that she doesn't want to see?
Mm-hmm.
That's a reminder of Perth, and maybe she doesn't want a reminder of Perth.
Right.
Is she trying to get away and also create no link to where she ends up? We do know that both those items were not used by her. So that seems like a dead end, right? That seems like maybe she, you know, if she took off, she didn't use those preparations.
Yeah, well, and she didn't use her credit card. I mean, not her credit card, but her bank accounts weren't touched either. So you don't take any of your possessions. These things that you are preparing for some reason, the card, the phone, they're gone. They're not used. And I don't know. To me, if she did run away, I don't think she ran away with a right mind.
No. We'll go down that avenue here in just a second. But one thing I want to talk about real quick is I think that a big solution to this problem is the reason why it's so difficult to figure out her disappearance is because we don't know what her intentions were that day. We don't know if she was planning something or not. And I think the way to figure that out, the answer to that for me is the van, right? The van is towed and we are told that she's a very private person. We're told this by not just one person. We're told this by many people, right? That she seems to be a very private person. She keeps her thoughts to herself.
Her mother says so. Her father says so.
And it's almost like with these journals that she writes poetically, so maybe she's the only one that understands them, or maybe it's encrypted, like you said, that maybe she's the only one that gets it. Right. And the thing that's driving me mad here is that she left those journals behind. She left those in the van in somebody else's control. And the thing is, we know a lot about her movements that day, but the thing that I fail to see time and time again in her movements that day, there seems to be no action towards retrieving that van or her belongings that are in the van.
Mm-hmm.
which seems very strange to me of a very private person. Now, this might point towards what you're talking about, a mental break.
Right.
You know, and we had talked about the shelter. She had stayed in this shelter at a month this month, at a month the next, you know, from time to time, she's in and out of this shelter. Mm-hmm. Now, most of these shelters, you have to obey their curfew rules. And the other thing is you can't show up messed up on drugs or alcohol when you come into these places.
Right.
I don't know the specifics of this location, but if it carries through to the other locations that I know of, what the staff was seeing there was they were seeing increased paranoia. They were seeing an increased mental break. They wondered if she was eating. There was a question if she may have been anorexic or bulimic or, mm-hmm. or something of that nature. And there seems to be a lot going on inside of Emma that they are saying, and they don't believe that it's drug related. There seems to be, she's spiraling out of control a bit here.
Right.
And who knows if that prepaid credit card or the prepaid cell phone, if those were preparations for her to make an exit, or if those were just random things that she did because she's confused.
Right. Yeah, and she could be going in and out of a manic state. So that's where it becomes, if she gets out of that state, maybe she, you know, maybe that's what really confused me, is when she's calling for help, you know, come get me. And then she says, don't. I wonder if it's like, you know, fading in and out of this like reality. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, what the hell am I doing here? Where's my family? Somebody help me. And then she starts fading back into some kind of more psychotic state. And she's like, no, I can handle this. You know, yeah. But you still have to make the phone call to the mother. So I don't know. I mean, this is it's a riddle wrapped in a mystery. I mean, this is a tough one.
Well, the thing I really worry about here, and I really kind of lean more towards the side of a mental break or a more diving into a transient lifestyle, because we've seen that type of behavior from her in her past at a very young age of 16. She seems to kind of be hopping around trying to figure out things and move from place to place. Mm-hmm. So I lean towards either of those conclusions, that she is still out there, that she, whether it be because of a mental issue that she's ended up somewhere, or that she chooses to move around or chooses to live elsewhere. I lean that way. But the thing that scares me and the thing that really worries me here is that in either of those situations could have left her very vulnerable, and somebody could have taken advantage of that. And I mean that for the worse. And that's what's scary here. And that is what makes me wonder why we've not seen use of that debit card and we've not seen her turn up anywhere.
Well, like I was saying, by the hotel there, the bridge, and there's this water, and they did do some diving to search, and they didn't find anything. And what they said was if she did jump into the water, that she would have floated up.
She would have surfaced at some point.
But there's
a lot of water there, right?
Yeah, but the more I've been digging, you know, there is also a big percentage of people go, yeah, well, that's what people assume what would happen. Mm-hmm. But there's a possibility that she would have actually been taken out to sea. Mm. So my thought, I think the conclusion I come up with is if she was having this break, and then when she has the encounter with the police, that might even send her off into more spiraling. And if she did, you know, if she ended up passing, I think it was through that water.
Mm-hmm.
If she didn't pass through there and she left on her own, I don't think she's left in a proper mental state. So, and maybe there's, you know, I don't know how that stuff works. I'm not a doctor. I'm a captain. But did she just keep fading and fading and completely lose touch with reality? And I think this is somewhat of Shelley's thoughts too. And the police have stated multiple times they don't think that there was foul play involved.
Right.
And so they're saying that for a reason. So like we were talking about Vancouver, she's been going to Vancouver a lot, spent some time there and looking because of the big homeless population. And normally based on, you know, there's a huge population of the homeless that have mental illnesses.
Your conclusions, Captain, are that this, the water's involved, that probably mental break, suffering some mental health issues.
Yeah, one of the two.
That were just going on and may have led to her taking her own life?
Mm.
Or an accidental death?
Well, I guess the, you know, the water, if there was some suicidal thought, maybe that she was just having this break. And it's hard to say, suicide because, you know.
Mental illness doesn't always lead to suicide. We know that. And sometimes it can lead to bouts of amnesia too.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is that, like, I don't know, like, that's just a tough, that whole situation is just a tough thing in general. But I think it would have been because of the mental illness that she would say, that she would think in her head, I'm going to jump into this water.
Yeah, and I lean towards the mental illness thing or transient lifestyle. One, because we've seen both behaviors.
But the transient lifestyle just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you just leave all your belongings. Here's the other thing here's my big question.
But they may go hand in hand, is what I'm saying.
No, I see that. But I think there's a big difference between being homeless and being a transient lifestyle. My big question, and I would like to know this answer, is she, when we brought up those selfies, the pictures with the selfies,
mm-hmm.
and we brought up that they found a digital camera in her van, right? They would have, hopefully somebody would have knowledge of which cameras she had. And I'd be interested if one of those cameras were missing. Because I think if she's going to take out on her own, I think that's the one thing she would not leave behind.
You're saying she may have had multiple cameras, and even though there was a camera found in the van, that she may have taken another camera.
Was there another camera?
Yeah.
Or was she just known to have this one camera and they found that one camera? Because to me, I could leave a lot of stuff behind, but there's certain items that I couldn't as far as an artist goes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, I mean, when you go on vacation, when I go on vacation, I have to take a guitar with me. Like, I just have to. Well, that's my work, but I have to take, you know, I can't go on vacation without a guitar.
And the thing for me, Captain, that would present some answers to me and help me come up with a better conclusion would be, like I said, can anybody find any evidence that on November 28th that she was trying to locate her van or because we know she had the money to retrieve it. And being a private person, I wonder about having those journals left in the van out of her control, what that would mean to her. So that's one answer that I need in this case. And there's many, many answers that need to be solved. It's a fascinating case. There's a lot of weird things that happened leading up to her disappearance, and it only left us with so many questions afterward.
Yeah, we could have talked about another couple episodes.
Yeah, let's stay here till Thursday.
No, listen, we don't have time for that. But the main reason that we're talking about this case is to try to help in any way we can. This case was big in Canada, but there has been, you know, I've seen things where there's sightings in Vancouver. I've seen that there are possible sightings in Seattle. So anything that we can do to get the word out, and we're going to, like I said, post pictures and stuff, and hopefully we can just create awareness.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and even though they found her passport in the van, her mother has always said that the United States would have been somewhere that she could have ended up. You know, she could have easily traveled to the States. So we need to locate Emma Filipov. She was 5'5", approximately 90 to about 110 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
She had blonde hair at times, brown hair at times.
Sandy blonde, yeah.
And she would be 30 years old this year. And you can get more information at the Facebook page, Help Find Emma. You can get a better description there. There's also ways to report a tip. I would recommend if you believe that you see her or you know her whereabouts, you can call 911. Anything that you can do to help, and check out the Facebook page, Help Find Emma.
And also, as we post pictures of Emma, feel free to share those on social media to help spread the word so we can help Shelley and the Filipov family I mean, because it's just a sad thing. And I know we brought up some questionable things about the family. That's just basically to cover the whole case. Mm-hmm. We don't think there's any involvement at all. Again, take a look. Be on the lookout. Do whatever you can. And let's help this family out.
Thanks to all of you for joining us in the garage this week. Thanks again to our sponsors. And a big thank you to Jordan from the Nighttime Podcast.
Yeah, check that out. Part one, part two, and part three. He interviews Shelly and interviews Julian. And just keep doing what you're doing, Jordan.
For everything true crime, go to truecrimegarage.com and make sure you sign up on the mailing list. And until next week, be good, be kind, and don't litter.